I'm longing for dear old Broadway, longing for dear old town. Yes, I'm longing to stroll on Broadway, watching the world go round. To be back where the boys all know me, back where the girls all bow.
This is the North Carolina Theater Story Show. I'm your host, Lynn Pryor. James Johnson is our technical director. We are coming to you from a 100-year-old house, former home of the Gilbert Theater, here in historic Haymont in Fayetteville, North Carolina. This is show number 12. Our guest today is Dale Kalinowski. Dale is a native of the Cleveland area in Ohio. He came to our town as a member of the armed forces, and fortunately for us, he stayed on. Dale wears many theatrical masks. You might see him clowning, conjuring, acting, playwriting, singing. The list goes on. Dale, welcome.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
And Dale, I want to say I'm very, very pleased that you have come, even though this is ready, you've arrived as a clown. You're wearing clown white. You have a bulbous nose on. You have this fright wig on. And I think it's wonderful. Many of our guests do that, even though it is radio. But it gets us all in the spirit. Oh, maybe not, James. James.
I think I scared him.
Well, I just wish James would be more with us on this. I see him clipping his nails as we speak. James, I have his mother on speed dial.
Oh,
but okay. Enough about that. I hope that maybe it'll work this time. Now, Dale, we have just been listening to our wonderful theme song, Longing for Dear Old Broadway. Now, if you, Dale Kalinowski, could be on Broadway tomorrow, what would you like to be doing? Acting, directing, having a play produced, whatever.
Probably acting and musical.
In a musical.
In a musical, yeah.
I see. Any particular one?
Oh, gosh, no, I've not really. I'm extremely fond of Les Mis, but so is everyone else on the planet, I believe.
Right, yes.
Oh, yeah, just a musical. I don't care what it is.
Well, when we loved you in Fantastics,
that was fun.
I was overseeing the Gilbert Theater for 18 years. Robin Parrish took over the helm 3 years ago, and that was her opening show, wasn't it?
That's right. That was a lot of fun.
Brilliant choice, and you were marvelous. The whole thing was terrific. Well, that's what you would like to do. Well, when that happens, I'll take the train up there and see you do it. Now, you see in front of you a red box.
Mm.
We know what a fine actor you are, whether you're singing or not. We know that what a fine conjurer you are. Playwright, the list goes on, as I say. But how are you at improv? That's the question. Now,
I'm not sure I trust you. What's in
Well, no, that's the whole idea. And I know that this is usually when some of our guests get a little bit sweaty around the
mm-hmm.
forehead. Well, but it's just something that I do, which borders on cruelty, I suppose.
Like the Saw movies.
Oh, my God.
But we're still going to do it. In a moment, you're going to open that red box, and you're going to find something in there.
Mm.
Last week, our guest was convinced it was going to be a shrunken head. No, it wasn't. But you're going to find something, and you're going to take it out, and within seconds, you're going to tell us, our listening audience, a story. First of all, you're going to describe it.
Uh-huh.
And then you're going to tell a story. It might be made up, it might be true, it might be a combination.
Okay, now it's time to put the kids to bed, folks.
All right. Open that box.
Oh, gosh. Drum roll, please. Here goes. Okay. I really don't trust Lynn. I mean, I've known you long enough to know that there's probably something really embarrassing in here.
Well, there's no snake.
No snake, okay.
Nothing's going to jump out at you.
Oh, I see. Okay. It's not embarrassing. We have a very small, what appears to be jade dog. Very, very small dog. Actually, Lynn, I told you 4 years ago I wanted this back. Folks, this is crazy because I let Lynn borrow this.
Now who's embarrassed?
Yeah. I let Lynn borrow this thing 4 years ago. See, I was in the Orient back when I was in the military. It was 1980, 82. and I was over in the Orient, and I found this little jade dog. The American price on it would have been equivalent to like 5 cents in American money. But I said, well, this is cool. I like this. I was going to get it from my mother for Christmas. I brought it back home. I brought it over to an antique dealer, found out this thing was worth $400,000. Lynn, this is from the Ming Dynasty.
You're loaning it out.
And I loaned it to Lynn. It's been 4 years and he's just now getting this back to me. I wondered what happened to this thing. Gosh, I should have insured it, you know?
I didn't realize, fortunately, I'm very sorry that when it fell onto the hearth.
Oh my God, there's a chip, Lynn! You chipped it!
How can you be sure this? Okay, I'm not going to pursue this story at all. I think this is going to be a disastrous time with this one. For me, not him. All right, we're putting this back. This is a very scary start for yours truly. So we have, there it is. That was delicious. Thank you.
Lynn quickly pocketed.
Yeah.
Now, Dale, when we talked earlier, when we knew that you were going to be on our show, we could have been talking about clowning. We could be talking about this and about that, about your love of music and musicals. But we decided to talk about conjuring, mm-hmm. magic. And I've been wanting to use this word for all week. Legerdemain, did I pronounce that correctly?
That's it, yeah, that's it. It
means light of hand. And you say it's an old-fashioned
word. Old word, yeah, old English word.
But you really are demonstrate. I don't even know how to use it in a sentence. Why didn't I just let that lie? No, I had to bring it up. Anyway, light of hand, you certainly are that. A conjurer, which that's a magician, a sorcerer, a wizard. There are different names I'm so glad that we decided that's what we're going to talk about tonight. Now, Dale, when did you start? First, in your way back in the mists of your childhood, mm-hmm. was there something that you started? May I just cook a quick story?
No, go for it.
In my life, somehow, and this book came out in the 30s, and my big childhood year was the decade of the 1940s, and I had a book by Houdini. And it was for children. It had about a dozen magic tricks in it.
Oh, wonderful.
And it had a card, and I wish I still had it. Probably quite valuable. It had a picture of Houdini on the cover. It was one of those board books. And it showed him doing something. And every once in a while, I would open that and do a trick. And unfortunately, it did not lead to a career. Or unfortunately. But you, as a child, what happened?
Well, I was about 12 or 13 years old, and prior to that, I've been interested in many different things. I'd always been interested in theater. I've always been interested in performing in one way or another. I mean, I would, myself and a good friend of mine, Kevin DeRosa, would set up a bunch of boxes in my backyard, and we'd put on plays in the summer for all the neighborhood. So I was always the outgoing. I was never, never shy. It was never one of my problems, is shyness. But myself and a good friend named James Oliver, one year back in, it was probably 74, maybe 74, 73, somewhere around there. We went to a little city outside of Cleveland called Geneva, Ohio. Now, for those of you from Ohio, you're going to recognize Geneva as Geneva on the Lake. It's always been known as that. It sits right on Lake Erie. And back in the early 70s, it was kind of renowned for being a hangout for bikers. I mean, it had kind of a shifty little reputation for quite some time. But they started cleaning it up in the mid-70s and kind of made it into like a little resort for families. They had trailer parks, places where you can come bring your trailer, stay for the weekend. A whole kind of like a little main street of pinball machines and novelty shops and all kinds of fun stuff. And Jim and I got on our bikes and said, well, let's go down to Geneva on the Lake. So we went down to Geneva on the Lake on our little bicycles and happened across a magic store. And I was, at that point, probably as interested as anybody else in magic. You know, kids are always fascinated by it. But it never really clicked in my head as something that I might want to do. But we threw the door open and I saw and this is kind of strange, I'll try to set this up for you. I threw the door open and the little short guy, and I can't remember his name for the life of me, the little short kind of stocky fellow, he was the caretaker or the owner of the store, had a 14 or 13 year old kid up with his hand in an arm chopper. Now, if you've ever seen a stage arm chopper, that's the first thing I saw when I threw the door open, was I saw this kid with his hand in a guillotine. And I'm thinking, good Lord, have I walked into the right place here? This might be a problem for all of us. And the fella and the arm chopper, just for yous out there in the audience that don't know what I'm talking about, the arm chopper stands about 4 foot tall, and it looks like a miniature version of a guillotine, and the hole is not big enough for a neck, it's big enough for your arm. So you stick your arm through it. Now, the whole illusion is, when you drop the guillotine blade, it looks, for all intents and purposes to the world, as if your arm has been chopped off and it drops into a basket.
Oh, my God.
In front of you. I'm not going to get into how it works, yes, but it's a fascinating illusion. It really does look nice. And today's price tag would probably be about $4,000 or $5,000, but he was demonstrating it for this kid. He just so happened to pull that little lever just as me and Jim walked in the door, and we saw that boy's arm drop in the basket. And I'm thinking, Jim, you sure this was a good idea coming down to Geneva today? I'm not too sure. But he invited us in, and he was such a nice guy. And a lot of magic stores, unfortunately, today are not so user-friendly. They're more interested in your money than they are making a friend. But this guy was just really outgoing. He showed us, he demonstrated practically everything in the store. And unfortunately, Jim, neither Jim nor I had any money with us that day. Otherwise, I would have left with about everything he showed me. But when I came back, I guarantee you, that was at Christmas. All I asked for was money. I said, all I want, Dad, I don't care about the bike or the telescope. I just want cash. And I went down to that. He drove me down. My dad drove me down to the little magic shop, and I picked up my first four or five magic tricks for...
And what were they?
The first one was called Scotch and Soda. And a lot of magicians out there that understand what that is, it's a coin trick. It uses some 50-cent piece and a Mexican centavo. And I was a vanisher. I'm not going to go into calling it what it is because it would give it away if I did. But anybody who's into magic knows what I'm talking about. It's a vanisher. And got the Scotch and Soda. And what was it? A deck of Svengali deck, which is a very old magical deck. It's a trick deck. And a couple of that. I can't remember the other things I got. I think one was a book. As a matter of fact, one was the book I brought today, but I won't go in there right now.
Did it have Houdini on the cover?
No, didn't have it. As a matter of fact, if you still had that book, it would be worth a fortune. But that started my love of magic, and I just couldn't stop thinking about it after that. After that, I was into UFOs real big up to that point, Project Blue Book and all that. I kind of set that aside, and magic was my thing after that, and all the way up until I joined the military.
So how did you... Did you have shows for the neighborhood?
Yeah. I did. Fortunately, I think I had some good advice from the get-go, because a lot of the books back then really told it the way it was. It said learning the magic is only the first part. Yeah. And I'll get into that in a minute, because I'm sure you're going to ask some questions in that direction. But a lot of people don't realize that. Let me try to preface this in another way. Anybody out there that recognizes the name Jeff McBride? Jeff McBride is a famous magician. You've probably seen him on World's Greatest Magic on many occasions. He's been around for many years. He does a lot of routines with Japanese masks. He's very, very prolific in magic, has been for many years. Well, I was at his lecture. When Jeff lectures, he only lectures to small crowds, 5, 10, 15 people at a time. He refuses to do a room full. He takes us in small groups. So we had a very intimate, up-close relationship with him. Man. I had the opportunity to ask him a few questions. And the advice that he gave me then was the same advice that I believe in now. He says that not everybody that is in the magic world making a fortune at this, and I'm not, obviously, but many people are making quite a bit of money at it. You don't have to be a great technician, but you do have to be a great actor. Uh-huh. And he says, and not necessarily even great, but you have to be good at acting. Because magic is theater. And that's, I've always truly believed that, because you can, and I guess another way to put it is that to be a good magician or a good performer, whether it's for adults or children, all it takes is maybe 60% or 50%, 60% technique and the rest theater. You have to be a good theatrical.
And so build suspense.
Absolutely. It's more than doing a magic trick. Uh-huh. And in our magic clubs over the years here in Fayetteville, which I was the president of for about 10 years, the International Brotherhood, our local ring, we tried to teach that to the young people. And I think it's very important to understand that it's a lot more than just learning how to do a magic trick. Learn how to be entertaining, too.
Yes.
If you can't entertain, all the tricks in the world are nothing more than just a trick.
Right. And so do you continue to grow?
You never stop growing. I don't care what field you're in. I mean, theater or whatever you're doing, music. If you, and I've always distrusted people who said they can't be taught anything more. Uh-huh. I turn away from them because you're lying. If you're not lying to everybody else, you're lying to yourself. You're never going to stop learning. If you ever stop learning, you're stagnating.
So how do you get new material? How do you find new tricks?
Well, I usually steal it from everybody that I can't. Just kidding. Well, actually, no, I'm not in a way because there is no such thing as a new magic trick anymore. But no, what I do is I like to go because I entertain children. Children is my forte. I do kid shows. Now, kid shows, there's an entirely different psychology in doing children's shows than there is in doing adult magic. Yeah. And I mentioned earlier that Lynn used to be a librarian who did a lot of story time for kids. He knows as well as anybody that there's a psychology to entertaining children. It goes far beyond just reading a book or doing a magic trick. The kids don't care how good you are. They don't care if it took you 15 years to learn that routine that you're doing. All they care about is that you're there to play with them. And when you get up there, they want to know that you're an entertainer and you're about to have fun with them. It just so happens I use magic to have that fun with them. Yeah. So if you introduce that to them from the very beginning and you let them know, hey, we're going to have fun, but we're going to use magic and do it, then they're yours the whole time. A lot of magicians never get that. A lot of magicians think, I'm going to do kids' magic because look at the money in it. Oh, man, I can go out and do 20 kids' shows in a week and make a fortune. But if the kids aren't stupid. They know if you love them. They know if you care about what you're doing. And they know if you truly have your heart in the right place when you're doing it. So that's why not a lot of magicians tend to turn toward children's entertaining because it takes a little bit different kind of heart, I think.
Yes.
A different kind of a mental approach to do children's magic than it does adult magic.
So you go to the schools?
I haven't in a long time. I don't do a lot of school shows. There's so many restrictions nowadays.
Ah, yes.
In doing school programs, I kind of turned away from that. But I do a lot of larger programs. I've stuck to doing children's parties, a lot of big children's parties, a lot of public festivals, events, things like that, business, a lot of business grand openings, things of that sort.
But some of the things that we talk about in theater, that timing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
As you say, it's theater.
Yeah, there's a timing is absolutely necessary in magic because not just for the effect of the magic, because that's important too, but with children, you got to remember the entertainment value. There's an old, I don't know if they call this the same thing in theater or not, it's look, don't see syndrome. It's the, what do you call it, the magician or the entertainer in trouble syndrome. It's what happens is children love to see the entertainer fail. So what you want to do is you want to always make sure that the kid is the winner because you got to make them, you make them the star. You don't make yourself the star. Mm-hmm. You make the child the star of the show. And you want to make sure that when you get up there, all the magic I do fails for me, but they're the ones that are empowered to help it happen. Uh-huh. I give them the magic word. I give them the power to make it, you know, magic work in their hands.
Yes.
And by the time you're finished, it's all them.
I see.
You're just along for the ride, so to speak. Yeah.
Well, Dale, this is absolutely fascinating. You're amazing. Now, what else might we say about that? Are you mentoring anybody? Have you?
Yeah, I have in the past. As a matter of fact, I'm kind of proud of this young man. His name is Frankie Davis. A lot of people in the Fayetteville area would remember Frankie. I founded our local Magic Society. I'm a member of the Clowns of America International. And also a 15-year member of the International Brotherhood of Magicians, IBM, not the electrical or computer company. That's why I have to say that. Well, you're part of IBM. Wow, cool. No, I'm part of the International Brotherhood of Magicians. I don't tinker with computers. But
they make just as much money.
They make, yeah, absolutely. But I founded the local International Brotherhood in 2000 or 2001. Can't exactly remember right now. And we had at that time about 25 or 30 members, and we were a large group in Fayetteville. And there was a young man who at that time was 12 years old. His voice hadn't even changed. He did his whole show. He sounded like Mickey Mouse. And just a great kid. His name was Frankie Davis. And we invited Harry Allen from Daytona Magic to come up and do a lecture for us. Harry came up and saw Frankie perform. And this young kid was blowing people away. So Harry hired him every summer to go on the road with him. And Frankie Davis went on the road with Harry all summer long for about 4 or 5 years until he graduated high school.
Oh, my gosh.
Then he went down and worked for him in Daytona. Frankie, to this day, is working at Epcot Center doing magic.
Oh,
and that's one of the most difficult gigs you get in the entire world is the Epcot Center. He has done well with it, and we are very proud of him.
But you were telling me before we went on the air that this society that was so vital is now down to just a few members. What's happened? Is it national or is it just...
Well, yeah, it's an international organization. We had to become chartered members.
But is the diminution a national... With,
oh, no. The local group is what I was mentioning.
Right. But, I mean, is it's just here that's not...
Doing right, it's just here. Yeah, yes. It's just a fable. We call them rings. As in, there's an old magic trick called the linking ring. So all your associations in that magic industry are called rings. We're ring number 341.
I see.
In the local area. And we get chartered to become a ring of the International Brotherhood of Magicians. And what happened is a lot of the members just started growing older.
Sure.
Physical problems, dropping out. And I got so busy that I really couldn't have much to do with it. So I dropped the presidency and went over to somebody else. And things just kind of went downhill, but I'm thinking that if I can find the time in the next year or two, we're going to jump in and we're going to try to boost it back up again locally.
Well, good for you. Well, just what a career you're having. So you have something, a recitation for us.
Sure, if you say so.
Yes, I do.
No, wait.
I'm scaring Lynn. No. He called me 5 times before the program tonight just to make absolutely sure I was going to make
it. Now, listen, but before we do that, you have a magic trick for us.
I do? Oh, yes, I do. Yes, of course.
So if I can get my notes in order here, we will have some kind of...
And I'll let you guys talk for a second while I get this.
All right.
I guess I'll describe this like one of those tennis announcers who sort of describe everything in a whisper. Well, the cards out. Carefully looking at them.
And he's slipping something up his sleeve.
Yeah, there you go. No, I keep that in my sock. Okay.
He does have his sleeves rolled up, I should say.
That's right, yeah. I'm going to do this as softly on this table because our microphone is actually sitting on the table. Every move I make on this table is going to make a noise, I understand. So let me do it right from here. As a matter of fact, I'll stand. I think it'll still pick me up from this location. Now, of course, the deck of cards is nothing extraordinary about that. Walmart deck of cards. But the thing I want you to look at is I want you to pick the cup up.
I'm picking up this small cup,
okay,
a stainless steel cup. About the size.
Oh no! Pick it up. Look at it good.
And really look at it good.
Put your finger in there. Yeah, become a proctologist.
All right.
check it out.
Well, do you use that joke with kids?
No.
I'm running my index finger inside this.
Is there anything hidden in it?
There's nothing hidden in it.
There's nothing hidden in it.
It's clean of everything.
How about the bottom?
And the bottom. There's nothing at the bottom.
Are there any holes?
And no, I'm holding.
How about this big one right there?
Holding up to the
light. You're missing that one. Big holder is. It's a cup. Of course, it's got a hole.
It is a cup.
It is a cup.
It's like
there
the
you
cup
go.
That you might leave at the doctor's office.
Okay, and I'll let you describe the deck of cards to them, which is a.
Do you want me to put this back on?
Oh no, you can hold that for
I'm
a second.
Holding
a deck of cards.
All right, deck of cards.
Okay. Uh-huh. Now, is there anything in my hands other than the deck of cards?
No, nothing.
Nothing.
Your sleeves are rolled up.
And I'd like you to reach into now. Now, being a theatrical person, your imagination is going to be really, really spot on this one. Reach into your breast pocket in your shirt. Pull out those two invisible quarters that I know are in there.
Two invisible quarters.
Right. And just place them on the table in front of you, if you would, right there. Okay? Now, I want you to take the cup. Take one more look just to make sure there's nothing in that cup. And place it gently on top of my cards. Upside down. There you go. Now, if you'd pick up one of those invisible quarters and gently place it on top of the cup. Now, I should have told you at the beginning of the name, this is called quantum quarters. Now, Lynn has just placed his invisible quarter on top of my cup, which is sitting on top of the cards in my left hand. I'm going to perform a quantum feat here. Now, those of you who know what quantum science is science that deals with interdimensional possibilities, things of that sort, more space and time and relativity sort of thing. I am going to take that invisible quarter. I'm going to pass it through this solid cup. And when it comes in contact with solid matter, it's going to automatically become solid. And if you'd hold your hand out just like that, we're going to try this. Here it goes 1, 2, 3, boom, there's one of them right there. Okay?
He has made that slap and dropped a real quarter.
He's examining the quarter to make sure it's real. He's got a magnifying glass.
It's George Washington on there. one side.
That's fantastic. And, made in China on the other hand.
So if it was like a plastic quarter.
There you go. Now place your other, your invisible quarter on top of the cup right there. Because once isn't convincing enough, twice. Hold your hand out, please. And boom, there's the second invisible quarter. There's the deck of cards, and there's the cup. And that's where I take a bow, and Lynn goes, oh!
And I'm going,
he's now 50%, 50 cents richer.
And I'm speechless. I've seen your sleight of hand things, and but I'm going to return these quarters to you, because I know you're already, because of that Ming dog.
Yeah, Ming dog. I'm in the hole 400,000 now.
Well, this is not the time to be speechless, but I am, so, there it is, Gail.
I tried to hold that close to the microphone so everybody at home could see it. I hope you guys got that. Sorry.
Well, it was marvelous, and let's move right along, because I have nothing more to say, except you're amazing. Now, you have a recitation for us, I understand. Mm-hmm. And can you give us, first of all, a little what it is and some background?
Well, I've done a lot of little indie films, and then nothing that ever really did anything. They're all just junky little things. But we're in the process of working on something really, really nice for the near future. But this was in a film that I was a part of, where I played the part of an old man named Carl Giddings, who was actually a ghost. And it was one of those story within a story kind of movies, where the young man stumbles across the old gentleman out in the forest around a campfire, who starts telling him ghost stories. And at the very end of the story, the ghost story actually becomes very relevant for the main character as well. So this is the character that I played in that. His name is Mr. Giddings, and he's sitting around a campfire in the middle of the woods with a young man who is unfortunately lost. Impossible! Impossible. Well, you throw those words around as if they really had a meaning, boy. As if they were really true. Oh, I know you young folk better than you think. The only thing you believe in is what you can find in your fancy computers, or what you see on your Twitface, your U-book, or whatever the hell. That just don't exist, huh? It's impossible. I'll bet if I told you 24 hours ago that you'd be lost in the woods sitting around a campfire with an old man telling you ghost stories, you would have said impossible, wouldn't you? Huh? Yeah? Yeah, you don't know much. You don't know nothing. Why, you don't know what that weird mist was that you drove through earlier. You don't know where you are right now. Hell, you don't even know what time it is. And if you don't know any of that, how do you know they don't exist? Huh? I'm telling you, boy, there are things that exist in this world. Things more dangerous than bears and badgers and deers, oh my. Things that wait patiently in the darkness. Scary things indeed. Things that'll hunt you back. Well, if you knew the truth about the shadows, you'd be home right now under your covers crying for your mommy. You'd better sit back there and let me tell you a few stories of some things that have happened right here in these woods. Why, maybe on this very spot where we're sitting right now.
Ooh, sure. Oh, my goodness. Dale, thank you for that.
No, please, throw money. Throw money. Thank you.
Well, I have two quarters I can give you.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. And a Ming dog.
Been looking for an excuse to use scary music.
James puts a lot of music under some of these things. Mm. Now, well, there's a memorable ghost story. Now, we're starting a new segment this week, Dale. It's called Free for All. I'm choosing a topic, and then we're going to have James, if you'll pay attention.
Well, I thought I'd get to hit somebody with a free-for-all.
Dale is going to be part of this discussion, and I'd hope that our regular guest, Mary McGee, would be here tonight, but unfortunately she's under the weather. So the three of us are going to be talking about stage fright.
Huh.
Now, there is this wonderful new book out, and it's by Sarah Solovich. It's called Playing Scared, A History and Memoir of Stage Fright. Here she just goes into stage rage fright in detail. Do you ever get stage fright?
Oh, yeah. Everybody does, yeah.
Okay. Like, just is there the degrees of it?
Well, not too much anymore because I'm so extroverted that really doesn't cross my mind too much anymore. Mm-hmm. But years ago, yeah, I think at one point or another, it depends upon, you know, the situation, but I think everyone does to a certain degree, or have.
Yes. Yeah. Now, of course, with magic, it's somewhat different than being, like with a few minutes, on opening night of Fantastics, when you were backstage ready to go on, were you
nervous?
You were nervous.
Yeah, just nervous. Yeah.
And this nervousness is caused by the adrenal gland, which pumps adrenaline into the bloodstream. And gets and does these things through the spider flight thing and so on, but it can be very debilitating. James, how about you? Are you ever?
Well, I've always, like Dale, I've always been quite an extrovert, and I found that, of course, you know, as you mentioned, it comes from adrenaline, and I've always comforted myself with the knowledge that typically when I get that boost of adrenaline, my mind works a lot faster. So if, if something happens and I'm nervous, then it actually works better for me because I'm able to think of a way out of it sooner. Actually, I remember this one time we were doing the Rocky Horror Show, and during that, I stepped out on the stage and I did a typical monologue. This was a show that let me, you know, sort of improvise a lot, so I was very comfortable on stage during that show. And I guess I was too comfortable because I stepped right off the front of the stage and face planted.
Oh, right? Oh boy.
And so I shouted, like, after hitting the ground, this is all part of the show. And then I went backstage, and for the first time, I was, like, really nervous. I was like, oh, man, I've lost the audience's. Their confidence in me, so I knew I had to do something to refer back to it, or else people would just be thinking about it and whether or not that was on purpose or what was going on. So we had just done Christmas Carol, so I searched the backstage and I found Tiny Tim's cane, and when I came out the next time, I came out with a crush.
Yeah, fortunately, it happened during a show like Rocky Horror, because I think with a show like that, you could probably get away with it a little bit more than you could the Christmas Carol if that were to take place. Yeah. Now, I don't know of this young lady. I'm sure it's a wonderful book, and she probably covers something like this in there, but I was told by a professional entertainer years ago, and I can see this being true, because there was an instance when I was doing, we were doing George M. Cohan, the life story of George M. Cohan back when I was in high school. And that was the only time I've really got stage fright to the point where I was completely frozen. I mean, I was frozen. I didn't know what to say. My mind went a complete blank.
Yes.
There were no words there anymore.
Yes.
So Miss Martello, sweet, lovely Miss Martello, our teacher, who was our director.
She slapped you around.
She was standing behind the curtain yelling my lines to me. Everybody in the audience could hear her, but it was perfectly all right. And I was just reciting them as I went, because what happened to me is that I immediately caught a glimpse of my uncle in the audience. And I said, oh my God, my whole family's in the audience. There's my uncle, there's my sister, my father, my brother, my mom, my grandma. I think they brought the dogs, the gerbil, the cat. Everyone was in the audience enjoying. And it just hit you. All of a sudden, wham, they're all out there staring at me right now.
Yeah, this is why frequently actors will say to me at the Gilbert when showing people their seats or whatever, I'll say the family that they want, the family members will come in to see the show, and I'll say, you've been asked to sit in the back.
Mm-hmm.
I immediately recognize my mother's laugh when she's in the audience. So that will throw me for like a few seconds. And I think, very lucky that the majority of the theaters I've performed at, particularly the Gilbert Theater, it is so lit that you can't really see the audience. But, you know, if you're ever in one of those places where they have the house lights up, then the nerves start kind of coming in, because then you can see their judging eyes staring right back at you.
Well, this is it. Yes. It also can the stage fright can hit you hard when you see someone in the first row or the 10th row reading the program.
Oh, yeah.
during your big monologue.
Yeah.
Well, if I mess up, they at least they're not paying attention.
Yeah, there you go. They might not catch the book or something. But I was about to mention earlier though about the gentleman. I can't even remember who it was that said this, but they said that a large percentage of the people who suffer stage fright. It's a matter of confidence in your material. Not necessarily confidence in yourself, because I think that to a varying degree everyone has to work on that throughout their life, but confidence in what you're doing. Because if you're confident in your material and you know what you're doing, you know from like the back of your hand what your next step is going to be, I think that kind of alleviates that portion that might cause a little bit of the...
Yes, there's a well-known story about Ethel Merman. She was in the wings waiting to go on in one of her musicals, and there was an ingenue was standing next to her, and she said, "Miss Merman, aren't you terrified?" And she said, "Yeah, I know my lines. Why should I be terrified?"
Yeah.
So I'm not surprised to hear her say that. But you hear other stories, like Daniel Day-Lewis was in Hamlet, the lead, in London, and had severe stage fright.
Whoa.
And halfway through the 4 hours or whatever it is that it's full length, he ran off the stage.
Huh.
and did not come back. And I don't, that's the story does not tell what happened to that. It was an understudy just pushed on, and he has never returned to stage.
Wow.
He's only been in movies.
You're still docking his pay to this day?
He's such a gifted actor.
Yeah.
Maybe he should have used some of his method technique to pretend as if he was a person who was not afraid of being on stage.
What an interesting idea. There you go, yeah. A method of a method.
Oh, and even Laurence Olivier. Evidently, severe stage fright, what we're kind of talking about tonight, can hit you late in the career. When Laurence Olivier was in his 50s, it was a 5-year period when it was absolutely terrifying and debilitating, and he had to
there's a great deal of psychology behind it, I'm sure.
Right.
I'd be interested in seeing that book myself. I might actually
get
that info from you before we
playing scared. But these are the list of things that can be part of stage fright: tense muscles, heartbeats. Dry mouth. No, one of my signs of stage fright for me is dry mouth. Trouble breathing, nauseation, being nauseated, dizzy, throat constriction. So there's all degrees, from over here at number one, just never bothered. Bob tells me he's never bothered by, just all of these over to 10, that someone like Daniel Day-Lewis is running off stage.
I think it's so much more fascinating to hear the stories of those that have been doing it for so many years,
yeah.
And to hear some of those stories. And even now, they're still suffering from the same.
Well, something I've always told myself to sort of reassure myself if I'm ever having any sort of concerns about doing something on stage is I believe it's been said a few times that there are more people who fear being on stage than fear death.
I believe that.
Yeah. No, that's what she cites that study. Maybe it's many studies, but one study says they list 12 or a dozen things to be afraid of, and appearing before people is always number one.
So probably about 80% of the audience you're performing in, they wouldn't know what to even do if the spotlight was put on them. They would be a nervous wreck. So, you can at least feel somewhat confident that, I'm doing something somewhat brave.
Absolutely.
The winning percentage.
The overall experience for stage fright is the feeling of exposure.
Mm.
Well,
I suppose all the cast of Hair at one time or another has probably felt that.
Equus.
Exposure. Equus, yeah.
Now, Stephen Fry, another famous actor, was in a play, and he just simply disappeared, left England, and...
not only left the stage, he got the hell out of the entire country. How about that?
And here's his famous quote on that. He said... the audience can see the shriveled penis in your head.
Oh, wow.
And so
it was a cold stage.
And so, you know, that fear that many men have in this penis thing, mm-hmm. and that's how he describes it. You can see the shriveled penis, and it's there's nothing worse. It's no fun. But my experience has been, fortunately, I have not had any of these super long list of things, the dry mouth and so on. And when I'm waiting in the wings, those last minutes before an entrance, I found myself saying frequently over the years, "Why are you doing this? What possessed you?
What were you thinking?
What was I thinking to go to this audition and to go through all this rehearsal, all this, to be in this terror?" Then, but fortunately, in my case, 30 seconds later, that's all gone, and you're having the time of your life.
Yeah, I think Lynn is one of those people who, once he's in front of an audience, he gets that energy sort of shot into him, and I've seen him get very sort of like, you know, he'll have just, you know, right before a show, he'll go and say his speech, but you'll see him, like, you know, practicing it, and he's really excited about the opportunity to try out some new jokes in front of an audience. So,
I think as an actor, once you get involved in your character, the first few minutes it may cross your mind, but I think once you're getting into the character and you're part of the scene, I tend to just forget.
Well, then you're not.
I tend to forget about who's out there looking or who's doing what.
Right. So that's why you're
kind of there.
Why you're not running off the stage.
Right. Yeah.
And Michelle Brezhnikov is another one who's suffered his entire career with terrible stage fright. And so I think he's mainly teaching now. Wow. No, it can end careers. I think this was a great way to start this new segment called Free for All. And next week we're going to continue with it with a different topic. Dale, thank you for being so helpful with this segment, and James too. But you know, I think it's time for us to not always rely on ourselves in the world of stage fright. Or whatever it is, we should appeal to that patron saint of actors, Saint Genesis. And so I have a prayer that we're going to offer up now to her, to him, because I'm not quite sure whether it's male or female. But here it is. Dear Saint Genesis, some of your faithful flock seek your guidance on a subject that is often debilitating. I speak of stage fright. Do you agree with me when I humbly suggest to fellow actors that stage fright can be overcome by simply keeping a bottle of vodka disguised as mineral water in your makeup case? This easy remedy is often an answer to cure jangled nerves. Usually the clueless audience does not notice that fellow actors are now the ones looking terrified as you bang into furniture and drop pages of dialogue. But at least you are calm and in control. And as the curtain, perhaps a bit early, falls, and perhaps leaving you marooned on the apron of the stage, my advice, take another bow and sweep off the stage or into the orchestra pit, as the case may be. Now, this, I don't know why I'm laughing. This is not... This is very serious, and I think it's despicable that I would find myself laughing in the face of this awful occurrence. And we eagerly await your guidance. After all, some of us have performances tonight, and the damn liquor stores close at 7 in this southern town.
All right, St. Genesis rocks. Yes, sir.
I'm recompiling these.
Remaining yours in appreciation. I hope this helps.
It does.
I really hope it helps. We can rely on her. Well, we're coming to our quiz. And we have, there are 13 questions that you're going to be asked. And I'll tell you what the questions are going to be in just a moment. But I want to tell you what your prize is if you are successful in a certain number of them. And the book is... David Copperfield.
Oh, Tales of the Impossible.
Now, this book It's was bought at great expense to our producers of the show. But that doesn't bother me. We have our sponsors, or if James would find more, we would have more sponsors for our show. Right now, no, we don't have one, but still, I find myself.
That's next week's prayer to St. John.
Or I found myself opening my wallet once again. But frequently, sometimes in the past in our show, I find myself not wanting to surrender the book. Just before we go on the air, I look it over again. I'll say, how could I possibly want to give this book up? But I do. This book, now this is a book of stories by famous people. If you recognize any of those names that have contributed.
Well, absolutely. Dean Koontz, the author. David Copperfield, Ray Bradbury is an author. Yeah.
These people have all written something for his book.
Wonderful.
Yeah. Anybody else?
Dave Wolverton, Matthew Costello, Janet Broner, F.D. Lisa Mason, Robert Weinberg, Raymond Feist, Larry Bond,
Taylor. That's a really smart way to write a book.
Absolutely. Right. Give everyone else credit. What a wonderful... I'm not sure. I'm looking at what you're saying, what you're trying to get me to say.
Well, you do recognize some of these names.
Oh, I've recognized most of them.
You recognize most of these names, and so you're going to really enjoy this book.
If you're successful.
Quick
prayer for to Saint Jeanette.
Well, a quick prayer. But now, our quiz is the following. I'm going to.
Is this going to count toward our final grade?
Well, I'm going to give you the name of a song, a well-known song from a musical. And you are to name the musical. Now, I'm not going to... There are 13 questions, 13 songs, and I was tempted to sing them, but my advisor said, no, I have a nice voice, but I'm not going to do it. I'm just because I don't want to distract from your answers.
Now, am I competing against James?
No, it's just
you. This is just for me.
It's just for you.
Just for me. I gotcha. Okay.
No.
A lot of people don't know the theme song.
James is going to attempt to keep score. It's been a rather pathetic recent time. I've tried to show him that this 1, 2, 3, 4 slash thing.
And apparently the last time he's your producer, I take it.
Well, I hope we have a good, an accurate count. That's all I can say. Are you ready?
I'm as ready as I ever will be.
Here is your first song. Oh, what a beautiful morning. You name the famous, show.
Oklahoma.
Number two, try to remember.
Oh, the Fantastics.
Fantastics. You better know that one.
It'd be sad if you couldn't remember.
Yeah, that would be real sad.
Number three.
I tried to remember. What could I say?
Rain on My Parade.
Rain on My Parade. Got me on that one.
All right. My Parade. Okay, you have two right. Number four. Some People. And Small World, Isn't It? All right, but Bali, number five, Bali High.
Bali High, they call me. South Pacific.
Good.
Yes.
Number six, Send in the Clowns.
Send in the Clowns. Oh, good Lord, I should know that too. Send in the Clowns. What was that? The Rocky Horror Picture Show.
do you know the composer?
Send in the Clowns. I used to. See, my brain isn't what it used to be, so I'm not good at
Sondheim.
Sondheim.
But if it comes to you, I'll give you credit. Okay. If it comes to you, you can just spurt it out.
Music Man?
No.
No.
Number seven, Till There Was You.
Till There Was You.
There were birds on the hill, but I never heard them.
I wish I knew. See, I'm not good at this. I really suck.
All right, the next one.
The Music Man!
There you go.
Right on the tip of your tongue.
Number eight.
Or someone's tongue.
number eight, If He Walked Into My Life Today.
walked to my life today. I'm probably not going to get many of these at all.
All right, number 9, getting to know you.
Oh, Maine!
Maine. It was Maine. Good for you. Right. Getting to know you.
Getting to know you. Getting to know all of your money. You. I remember that one.
If you sing anymore, we have to pay for it.
There you go. Yeah, sorry. James. Yeah, we get 15 seconds right for free. Yeah. Something like that. No.
All right, thank you for your reminder. Now, but this is a governess who goes to a Eastern Kingdom.
Oh, the King and I.
Number 10, If I Love You. It's the
Fiddler on the Roof?
No.
No, that's Do You. Do You.
He finds out that his girlfriend is pregnant. And he sings about it's maybe it's a girl. But nobody, it's a boy.
My sister hasn't got a musical. Oh, sorry.
If I Love You.
No, I can't get that one. Sorry. I'm really good at that. Carousel.
Carousel, very good. Okay.
Did you get it?
Carousel. Number 11, Bewitched, Bothered, and Bewildered.
That I have no idea. That I can't.
Wild Again. The movie is with Frank Sinatra, Kim Novak, Rita Hayworth. He's a rogue.
Most of his movies, he was a rogue. Nah, sorry, I don't.
It was Ocean's 11, the musical.
Ocean's 11, the musical, yeah, there you go. sorry. Folks, okay. I like musicals, but I apparently suck at remembering them.
maybe this time.
Maybe next time.
Maybe this time.
I wish I would have known the topic before I came.
There's somebody right now screaming at their computer.
Yeah, there's someone going, "You idiot!"
Okay, number 13, You're Just in Love. Maybe. Let's see.
You could have picked some easy ones.
I'm sorry. This one was with Ethel Merman in the 50s. She's an ambassadress, an ambassador to a small country.
Coral.
No. You're just in love.
Ethel Bourbon.
Ethel Bourbon. She's Call Me Mad.
And the first Ready for Hollywood?
Call Me and that's Call Me Mad. Call Me Mad.
Call Me Mad. Call Me Mad.
And number 12, maybe this time was Cabaret. I'm sorry.
I'm a loser. Sorry.
Well, no, I'm James. He had some right. I know he did.
He has 7 correct out of 13.
Well, that's over half. The book is yours.
Oh,
there you go.
And I'll donate it back if you want to read it.
No, it's
well, it's like most of the books in my collection. I don't really own them anymore. Everyone else has them.
This is my way Beautiful. Of making up for keeping that Ming.
That's right for so long. Yeah. Beautiful book. Thank you.
Maybe a more modern musicals would have done.
Yeah, probably would have done it for me.
But you have
Defying Gravity.
You have over half. And that's what got you the prize. Now, the next segment was devoted to theatrical superstitions. And we've had some listed, mentioned here over the weeks. Do you have one that you could share?
I don't believe in being superstitious. My mother told me it's bad luck. Okay, yeah. Everyone's like, oh, man, that sucked. No, theatrical superstitions.
Uh-huh. No, so we've had, like, the
Well, of course, saying the famous bard's name would be one, obviously.
The Scottish play.
Right.
We've had that. That's all right. No, but you're not a particularly superstitious.
No, not really. No.
That's fine. Well, now we're going to talk about, we're going to be sharing books. I hear you brought a book.
Well, I brought the Bible of Magic for all beginners. And
it's called the Bible.
That's right. It's called the Bible, yeah. You perform more magic than most of us, kid. And he did it so much better. No, this is actually, it's by Mark Wilson. And those of you in my age group, when I was a child, used to watch Mark Wilson's Amazing Wonderful World, Alakazam, I think it was called, on the television many years ago. Mark Wilson was a magician who had a television show that was aired on Saturday mornings back in the 60s, and I watched mostly the reruns from it because it was actually a little before my time. But Mark Wilson is considered the king of all TV magicians, who went on to do a lot of performances throughout the world and authored a book called Mark Wilson's Complete Course in Magic. And I happen to have a copy of it. I've got actually two of these, and I loaned one out to young people in our used to loan it to young folks in our magic club who are learning. This has got to be the best, most well-written book on the subject because it goes through every single aspect of magic, from cards to coins to manipulation of many different items, all the way up to large stage props and how to build them. And he doesn't give away any really big secrets here, but he gives away enough to teach you how to, the beginnings of. To me, it's one of the most concise books ever written on the subject. And I don't know who he got to do. I never really looked at the credits to see who he got to do his illustrations, but they're absolutely fantastic.
Uh-huh.
For those people, and you probably out there in the radio listening world right now, or what do you call that? Not radio, really, but if you're listening on your computer right now and you've ever tried to buy a magic trick in a magic store, the first thing you noticed about the instructions were it looked like they were written on another planet by someone who does not speak English. Because what those people that make these magic tricks are giving you is not their A material. They're giving you their B or C material.
I see.
On that little piece of paper. But Mark Wilson here gave you his A material.
I see.
He gave you everything in this book that and he gave you the most really well laid out photographs, or pictures actually, drawings of how to do each of these illusions. You can learn from this book more than you could learn from going to 100 lectures.
I see.
So if you ever want to get involved in magic, that's the one to buy. Go out and buy Mark Wilson's Complete Course in Magic. It's a big book. It's not cheap, but it's well worth it.
Yeah, that looks expensive.
Yeah, it's about $40 at Barnes & Noble's.
So that's for, like, people who want to make a career.
People who are serious about it. Yeah. We get a lot of kids that used to come through our magic clubs, and you can tell right away if they're just there to learn a secret. Yeah. We don't necessarily want to give out secrets to people. Yes. We want to find out if that person's got a zeal to learn magic, because when you go in there and you have, the way we can tell, I'm sorry if I'm stumbling tonight, my lips aren't quite up to speed with my brain, but the way we can tell if someone is truly, truly, really got that bug to do magic is once they find out you have to rehearse.
Yes.
Once they find out it takes practice to do this well, a lot of them you'll see is drift away.
Yes.
And at that point, we keep the ones that stay. Yes. Obviously, the ones that stick there and keep asking the questions.
Yes.
Those are the ones I'll loan that book to, and I'll say, okay, you're serious about this. It looks like you really have a zeal for it, so here, go for it. There's the book.
Oh, Dale, marvelous. And it's, of course, still in print.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I don't think that'll ever go out of print.
Well, now we move on to mailbox. We had a number of letters today. Some of them were fan letters, particularly for our guest last week, Greg King, and one letter said, "Is Greg King going with anybody?" Well,
oh, hell! If I knew I could hook up on this show, I'd have been here a long time.
I'm bringing this up because why? I'm just saying to people out there who are asking such things, this is not a dating site,
right? Could I have that letter one more time?
Well, I just wish the quality of the letters were very high this week. I'm very sorry, and I'm going to just throw them away.
That won't come up a picture. Or?
Naturally, what you do with high quality letters is you throw them away.
No, we've shredded them. We've sent them to senior citizens for collages. But today, I just hope that we can kind of raise the. I'm sure your contribution this week, Dale, is going to raise the bar a lot. Mm-hmm. Now, here we come. You notice that I have picked up our stopwatch. And this is our segment where I give you 60 seconds to change the world of theater in Cumberland County. Now, you had said to me earlier when we were talking about the different segments that, golly, you couldn't think of much. So that's all right. You might just reinforce what you find good. And are you ready?
Yeah.
All right, go.
I'm glad that's not a detonator. Well, the thing that I told you earlier was that I'm not really into the logistics of theater, so I can't get into that. But from what I've seen so far in Fayetteville, now, I told Lynn that 10 years ago, I would have said, please, no more Sound of Music. You know, diversify. Because a lot of the shows we were seeing were the same old, same old. But I think now, I think both of our really major theater groups in Fayetteville are doing a wonderful job with the diversity. We have Hedwig and the Angry Inch coming down there to the Cape Fear, and we've got some fantastic shows like A Wonderful Life. I've never seen that on stage, actually, coming to the Gilbert. So, yeah, I think we've got some diversity. That's wonderful.
But anything at all, what about education? What about the schools?
Well, I haven't kept up with what the Cape Fear is doing, but I know that the Gilbert is doing a fantastic job with education. So I really can't say anything, you know.
And so there is 58, 59, and 60.
Oh, I just thought... No, I'm sorry.
you just blew the ears out of it.
Yes, I probably just killed everybody's headphones.
Well, so now our segment on birthdays. James, we only had one celebrated birthday this week. John Houston was born on this day in 1906. Is there anybody local that I need to be shared with?
That I know of.
James?
Well, people are always welcome to send me birthday gifts, no matter what
the birthday is. Absolutely. I'll accept them at any time of the year.
It was 2 weeks ago that was my birthday, and as our guest as well, Anthony Morrison, and shared the same Bastille Day, July 14th. Someone brought a cake. It was just just wonderful.
Efren Cologne, who he's been in improv shows and that sort of thing, he actually has a birthday today.
Oh, wonderful. Happy birthday, Efren. It's Dale. You know that.
Well, don't we miss Efren.
Apparently, like in the coming days, both from the improv show, Brian Dukes and Jay Zaday will be having birthdays.
So. Well, happy birthday, Brian!
Well, there's our expanded birthday.
As will Roger Mullen, who does a lot of coverage of the arts for Fable Observer.
Wonderful.
Well, thank you for finding those things. My method of finding evidently is somewhat dated. Now, I want to thank you very much, Dale, for being on our show. What a fabulous guest
you
have been.
Appreciate it.
I knew you'd be marvelous, and you just lived up to that. And so I am going to say, as I always do, this is Lynn Pryor asking James to dim the lights and go to black. Well, I urge you all to find a play to see this week. So until next Thursday, thank you for your company. And Dale, having ended our show, but I did prepare you for this question, didn't I? This is a P.S., a podscript P.S., asking this question, what is the universal question?
I just don't know.
What is the universal question? Well, I do know what it is, and I'm going to share it one day. It's perhaps some months off before I share it, but it is so important that I want to build the suspense. I want a lot of people be talking about it because it can save the world. The answer.
Well, gosh.
For I'm longing for dear old Broadway, longing for dear old town. Yes, I'm longing to stroll on Broadway, watching the world go round, to be back where the boys all